Hello, my name is Jeffrey Singer, and I am a New Jersey licensed psychologist. For the past 5 years, I have been the facilitator of the Men's Group. The Men's Group is a weekly 90-minute psychoeducational and psychotherapeutic group for Jewish men. The group takes place at Jewish Family Services in Clifton, New Jersey. The Men's Group operates under the auspices of Project SARA, which stands for Stop Abusive Relationships at Home. Although the group accepts court-ordered referrals, the majority of its membership is voluntary. The group addresses topics related to effective communication, building empathy, enhancing self-esteem, domestic abuse, power and control, and anger management. Today's talk will focus on certain salient aspects of anger management. For me, growing up as a rabbi's son, the material is very personal, and it is no accident that I am a psychologist with this subspecialty. Anger is an emotional state that varies in intensity from mild irritation to intense fury and rage. Anger, like all feelings, is a normally occurring emotion that has considerable adaptive and functional value for coping with life's adversities. Anger can facilitate perseverance in the face of frustration or injustice, and it can mobilize psychological resources to energize behaviors that take corrective action. The capacity for anger is a survival mechanism. It provides for personal resilience, it is a guardian of self-esteem, and it potentiates the ability to redress grievances and to boost determination to overcome obstacles to personal happiness. However, these important adaptive functions served by anger are commonly offset by the role of anger in aggressive behavior, stress-related health problems, damage to important social relationships, and by its entanglement with other distressed emotions such as sadness, fear, and disappointment. Anger that gets out of control affects every aspect of life with staggering statistics. 52% of divorces are granted on the grounds of either physical or emotional cruelty. Surveys show that anger is a prominent feature of over 17% of marriages. Battered women, on an average, survive 35 incidents before they file a police report on their spouse. Children who grow up in distressed families are physically harmed nearly 50% of the time. These children are more likely to engage in delinquency, drug use, and violence. They are also at higher risk of being expelled from school and in later years having job-related difficulties. Unregulated anger has been found to be associated with physical and psychological health impairments. Our threshold to react angrily is lowered by fatigue, sleep deprivation, hangovers, and pain. A poor diet may also contribute to anger arousal. In the realm of physical health, chronic anger reactivity and anger repression are established as having detrimental effects on the cardiovascular system and are associated with high blood pressure as well as cancer. Furthermore, chronic anger arousal can raise lipid levels and increase plaque formation in the arteries. We can conclude that chronic anger and hostility are associated with higher death rates. With regard to psychological well-being, anger occurs in conjunction with a wide range of psychiatric and psychological disorders. These syndromes include impulse control problems, mood disorders, personality problems, and substance abuse addictions. The central problem of anger is that it can become dysregulated. Anger can easily become a habitual response to typical daily stresses. The mental health field itself inadvertently contributed to the mismanagement of anger by encouraging people in the 60s and 70s to let it all hang out. Psychologists now say that this is a dangerous myth. Some people use this discredited notion as a license to hurt others. Research has found that letting it rip with anger actually escalates anger and aggression and does nothing to help you or the person you're angry with to resolve the situation. It is best to find out what it is that triggers your anger and then develop strategies to keep those triggers from tipping you over the edge. For the vast majority of us, Anger is an important subject not only because it is a significant activator of violent behavior, but also because it is evoked by many stress-inducing circumstances. Anger can be caused by both external and internal events. You could be angry with a specific person, for example, a coworker, supervisor, spouse, sibling, or a child. Common external events such as traffic jams, canceled flights, endless meetings, or missed appointments can also generate significant anger. Mental energy devoted to worrying, ruminating, or brooding about your personal problems or traumatic memories can increase anger as well. Since the arousal of anger typically interferes with information processing, it detracts from prudent thought and considerate action. Therefore, anger typically needs to be regulated in order to maintain efficient functioning and problem solving. Despite the gloominess of all this, there is great hope. Anger control techniques can successfully be used as interventions with spouse batterers, children with conduct problems, and physically abusive parents. More importantly, even among the few of us remaining unlabeled, unclassified, or undiagnosed, we can also greatly benefit from anger management interventions and techniques. Our bodies are designed to make us feel bigger than life at the sign of a perceived threat or provocation. This fight or flight response serves us well in dealing with all sorts of threatening situations. Things that affect our body can make us more emotionally reactive. Most of us have excellent, valid reasons for our anger and frustrations. The question is, do we get so angry or aggressive that our responses become self-destructive and harmful? Our goal is not to eliminate anger, but to learn to modulate anger to have constructive, functional outcomes. The way that we perceive an event will ultimately determine how we react. Events occur in the physical world. These events are objective occurrences which we bring meaning to. Through our perceptions, we ascribe meaning to these events. We bias our perceptions with our own personal meanings, implications, and nuances to these external events. After evaluating what we think has happened, we then take action accordingly. The focus on analyzing our thoughts and perceptions as a treatment approach was first seriously introduced during the 1970s and is referred to as the cognitive model. This approach has received consistent scientific support and can be used to treat a broad range of emotional problems, including anxiety and depression. The cognitive model focuses primarily on automatic thoughts and thinking processes. Automatic thoughts are made up of the content of our stream of consciousness, which is material we are typically aware of. Examples of automatic thoughts are often seen in movies when subtitles are shown depicting what the characters are actually thinking. Automatic thoughts are also referred to as internal dialogues or self-talk. The other relevant unit is referred to as thinking processes. These are the mental filters we use when we scan a situation or consider our own internal state of being. These mental filters can easily bias our perceptions and experiences, often to the detriment of our optimal choices. For example, if someone feels entitled to having things go their own way all the time, as soon as their cognitive processes perceives a violation of their entitled assumption, they will feel disgruntled and irritated. If they could learn how to generate alternative and competing cognitive processes, or put differently, more new mental filters, they may tolerate such disappointments more constructively. An example of a competing alternative mental filter might look like, I can tolerate when things don't go my own way. Such acceptance could influence their automatic thoughts to include self-statements such as one person on this planet of 6 billion people, if things don't always go my own way, I will be okay nonetheless. Chronically hostile and angry people have developed lower thresholds for perceiving threats, slights, and attacks. These people take many events personally when it's simply a case of stuff happening. When threatened, hostile people tend to engage in self-talk that increases anger, such as, "Nobody talks to me that way without paying for it. Who do they think they are?" This self-talk may lead to an attack, which only further fuels more angry and possibly even aggressive responses. Change to their internal dialogue can have a great impact on how angry they become. Replacing these hot thoughts with more positive or neutral perceptions and constructive self-statements can create an internal script that can de-escalate anger arousal. Being less irritated, in turn, can create better problem-solving and more constructive courses of action. In order for this approach to work, one needs to genuinely appreciate the influence of our appraisals and judgments on external objective events and of the self-talk internal dialogues we generate from our appraisals. After understanding this, the next task involves capturing the content of our self-talk by honestly reflecting what we say to ourselves. Many of us are not used to approaching our angry feelings this way. Given our human vulnerabilities, we are not highly self-observant or self-reflective. Anger may feel like an automatic reaction to external events or a mood that wells up inexplicably from within. However, the skills of self-monitoring and the tracking of self-dialogue can be continually enhanced. People can learn how to focus more of their attention internally to their thoughts, appraisals, expectations, and assumptions. People can then learn how these appraisals react with their feelings and behaviors. It is often a contrast of reactions to the same situation that points up the influence of these internal dialogues. That is, understanding why we reacted differently to similar situations will help us appreciate the different internal dialogues that we were experiencing in the two similar situations. I would now like to turn to specific cognitive processes commonly found in angry individuals. The first process is referred to as the misestimation of event probabilities. Many angry individuals overestimate the likelihood or probability of negative events, such as unfair treatment or rejection. Often, having such negative expectations create the very conditions they were trying to avoid. When people underestimate or fail to appreciate positive outcome probabilities, they tend to negate the personal and situational resources at their disposal. This increases the sense of trespass and violation and inhibits effective coping. People adhering to this negative cognitive process often fail to consider the countless times that a positive outcome did occur, and they tend to focus only on the few negative outcomes. Clients making this error need to explore probabilities on a logical and experimental basis to arrive at more accurate appraisals of their self and of the world. The second process is misattribution. Many angry individuals jump quickly to egocentric, self-centered, negative conclusions, even when situations are ambiguous or information would suggest alternative, more benign possibilities to the motives of others. Their causal attribution systems often are marked by automaticity, hostility, personalization, and mind-reading qualities. That is, such individuals blindly and uncritically accept that they know the true motives of others and explain these events in negative, attacking ways that are coded as having been intentionally directed towards themselves. Individuals employing such attributions know what others are thinking and their motivations of their hurtful, damaging behavior. For example, they quickly know that another person purposefully did something to get back at them. Such people typically react as if their attributions are valid. Such psychological vulnerabilities facilitate road rage. When an anonymous driver's miscue can be experienced as a purposeful, premeditated, life-threatening attack which must be avenged, acting on misattributions can have devastating effects. If we considered our highways, byways, streets, and avenues in a view similar to that of a community, road rage would decrease dramatically. To give an example, when someone cuts in front of you with their shopping cart in a supermarket, one typically doesn't swear, give the finger, or chase after them all up and down the aisles. Back to misattribution. Even when there may be validity to the hostile motivations of others, angry people tend to respond stereotypically with defensiveness, aggression, and anger without entertaining other cognitive or behavioral options. People who make this type of error need to explore the automatic attributional process and entertain other plausible interpretations and actively seek confirming or disconfirming information. It can be very threatening and almost disappointing to angry people when they realize that their perceived attacker's intentions were not really personally leveled at them at all. The third cognitive process is demandingness or dictatorial thinking. Anger here often involves a violation of rigid, absolutistic rules and expectations, and the elevation of one's preferences to moral dictates or demands of oneself, others, or events. The sense of affront, injustice, and frustration escalates as one's shoulds and expectations are not met. It is as if these people know for certain how the world should be arranged and how others should behave. When their rules and regulations are invariably violated, temper tantrums ensue. People engaging in such enraging pursuits, enraging for them and their subjects, need to recognize the idiosyncratic construction of their reality. Such demands and dictates need to be replaced with realistic personal preferences and values, ones that the individual owns and actively pursues but does not impose on others. The fourth process is the assuming of catastrophic implications. Many angry clients automatically code unmet needs in dramatic, dire terms. These terms are, this is awful, that's terrible, I can't stand it. Clients making this error need to realistically ask themselves how bad conditions are and to label events in reality-based negative but often less extreme terms. These terms may be annoying, frustrating, irritating. However, these are terms with which most individuals can cope. The fifth process is inflammatory thinking. This is a pattern of thinking that is commonly seen in many angry reactions. It involves labeling things in connotatively highly negative, often obscene ways, such as jerk, slimeball. These words have an incendiary quality of cognitive gasoline as the individual responds to the emotive meaning of the label rather than the reality at hand. People need to consider replacing these colorful terms with realistic, situation-specific appraisals. The next cognitive process is overgeneralization. Overgeneralization has to do with broad, sweeping conclusions about time or people. Such broad conclusions sound like, I never get my way, this always happens, or people are idiots, or that one is worthless, or this is the worst situation I've ever seen. Such processes elevate the sense of trespass and damage. Once events are so coded, the person responds to the meaning of their construction rather than the specifics of the situation. correction of this process involves becoming more of a situational thinker, focusing on the specifics of a given situation and basing feelings and the reaction on the specific situation. The last process is black and white thinking. This type of thinking can be referred to as dichotomous either-or processing. When an individual construes their reality in a highly polarized way, good-bad, winner-loser, love-hate, positive elements are discounted. People who engage in this type of thinking should consider employing qualifying adjectives, adverbs, and phrases that allow for the nuanced shades of gray to be considered. I would now like to turn our attention to automatic thoughts or the specifics of our internal dialogues. Examples of adaptive internal dialogues can sound like the following. I don't need to prove myself in this situation. I can stay calm. As long as I keep my cool, I am in control of myself. No need to doubt myself. What other people say doesn't matter. I am the only person who can make me mad or keep me calm. My anger is a signal. Time to talk to myself and to relax. The generation of internal dialogues can often make the difference between staying in control or allowing your rage to win the day. Employing Socratic questioning when making our appraisals can have a profound impact. Such questions as, what is the worst thing that can happen? Do I have all the facts? Are there alternative ways of understanding the situation? What are the implications of my understanding can often increase effective problem solving and break anger-inducing cycles. It is important for people to remain task-oriented and to seek out solutions to problems rather than seeing situations as personal challenges. Often breaking down the arousing situation into smaller units can feel less overwhelming and threatening. It is also important to terminate problem solving when no solution is available, rather than attempting to force the issue and increase angry feelings. What is often overlooked is rewarding self-efficacy. After we have successfully negotiated an anger-arousing situation, it is important for us to self-reward our efficacy. This will reinforce our ability to handle threatening situations. In closing, practicing these skills will greatly enhance our happiness. As a philosopher said 2,000 years ago, the thing that upsets people is not what happens, but what they think it means. I hope that you will be able to use some of these techniques and ideas and try them over and over again. Thank you very much.